The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
Then, good morning to you. It is 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, and we are ready to rock and or roll as the situation may require. It is a Tuesday, the second morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024, and that means it's the second morning of the Limb Loss Awareness Month. Limb loss, what, Seth, what was the whole thing called again? Limb loss awareness, limb loss,
limb
something?
Loss and limb difference month.
Difference, that was it, limb difference month. So Seth, it's day two of the limb difference month. How are you being limb different celebrating today?
Well, you know, I'm missing a leg and everything. I'm looking forward to the parade because you'll have a bunch of people hopping and waving with just a stump.
You did not just say that.
So the parade's going to be fantastic, I'm telling you about it. You're not going to want to miss this one. It might take 6 hours, but it's going to be one heck of a parade.
You can't say that.
I can say whatever I want because I am limb different.
You are totally right, though. If you are a part of the quote-unquote oppressed or marginalized or whatever group, I guess you do. You kind of have carte blanche to say anything as offensive as you want.
Absolutely. Happy Easter to everybody.
I can't believe that.
I think that if I go to IHOP, I should get a quarter off my meal.
Didn't your wife drop that Hoppy Easter on you?
She did. And actually sent me a text, too, with a meme that says
Hoppy Easter. Have you filed yet?
Not yet. Close.
You probably should. That's just cool. She can't do that. You can. You're limb different. She's not. She can't mock you in such egregious ways.
But she helps me through the limb difference, so that I guess that gives her a little bit.
Does she help you balance when you're hopping?
She does. She keeps me upright.
I'm going to continue to push. I may start a GoFundMe, or no, I don't. We don't use GoFundMe. It's left wing. We
give
do
and go.
A give send go. Yeah, to purchase springs to spring up your prosthetic leg, because I told you, there's nothing I want to see more in this world than you pogo sticking around our building in our studios. We need springs in your big metal leg. That's what we need.
I just want the parade.
And I mean like super taut ones, too, so that you can really live up to the logo you have on that thing. I want super taut springs so that you can jump higher and spring higher than anybody could even imagine. If you're so super, let's prove that.
Absolutely.
That's what I want to see happen.
Yeah.
All right. So happy second day. We'll have to recognize Seth every day this month now. Otherwise, we will be in trouble because we will be called limb phobic, I guess, right? Or limb different phobic. I don't know what they're going to come up with. They got to come up with something if we don't. If we don't bend our knees that are not artificial at the fake feet of people like the people who do have them artificial, then we're in trouble.
That is offensive right there. You can bend your knees and I can't.
All right. Well, there you go. There's our there's our daily tribute for the month of April to Limb Difference Week, or Limb Difference Month, rather. All right. Do appreciate you being with us on AM 1420 The Answer. We have a lot to do today. Coming up on the program, we are going to be talking with Peter Kersenow, as it is a Kersenow Day. You've got a lot. You should thank me for that, by the way. You've gotten a lot of Kersenow in the last week. We had him last Tuesday, as normal. Then we had him sit in for me on Thursday and Friday while I was away. And now he's back again for another hour. So Kersenow putting in the overtime, and we appreciate that very much. Peter will be with us at 10:10. At 11:10, we're going to talk to Jason Shepherd. He's a social media guru, and he's got some responses to something that was very popular among concerned parents. And that is Governor Ron DeSantis down in Florida signing a bill that bans children under 14 from having social media accounts. Some say that might go just a little bit too far, that it might be a little bit too much of government overreach. Or some might say we've got to get our kids' noses out of these screens because it is just torturing them in so many different ways. So we're going to talk about that with Jason Shepherd. So those are the guests today. And, of course, you are a guest today when you're ready at 216-901-0945. Or 888-281-1110. Time for our top 9 and 9, but let's pledge first. Patriots stand. I'm going to guess that the LSU women's basketball team will not be standing for this pledge with us. Seth, did you see that last night? Did you know there was a women's Elite Eight game last night between Caitlin Clark's Iowa Hawkeyes and controversial LSU Fighting Tigers in the women's tournament?
I didn't know there was a game, but I saw it on TikTok that they were not on the court for the national anthem.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a routine thing for them or if this was a specific statement, because there's been all kinds of racial undertones that have surrounded this game in the lead up to it. Caitlin Clark is white. Most of the Iowa players appear to be white. Most of the LSU players appear to be black. And so, therefore, if you cheer for Caitlin Clark in Iowa, you are a racist. If you cheer for LSU and Angel Reese and their players, well, then you are compassionate and a true anti-racist and a member of the woke crowd. It turned into a very, very ugly online war between the two. I don't know if this has anything to do with it or not, with the, you know, oppression Olympics, with everybody kneeling during the anthems, going back to Colin Kaepernick or not. But last night at the Elite Eight in a nationally televised game, LSU's team was not on the floor for the playing of the national anthem. They were in their locker room while Iowa stood there dutifully and patriotically. So take that for what it's worth. I haven't gotten any explanation from the LSU team, but they were not there and everyone noticed. That's all I can say. All right, let's do this now. If you are like the LSU players, you can, you know, well, rather, if you don't want to be out here for this pledge, you don't have to be. You can be like the LSU players and either go in your locker room or take a knee. For the rest of us,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, 13 minutes after 9. It's still 9, so let's do this.
It's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio.
All right, here we go.
Number 1.
President Trump yesterday did what he said he would do, posted a $175 million bond in his New York civil fraud case, preventing the state from seizing his assets while he appeals. New York appellate court judge had given the president 10 days to put up the money after a panel of judges agreed last month to slash the amount needed to stop the clock on enforcement. If Trump wins, he won't have to pay the state anything. He'll get all of this money back that he's put up. The bond essentially is a placeholder. It means that it guarantees payment of the judgment if the judgment is upheld. If that happens, the presumptive presidential nominee for the Republican Party will have to pay the whole thing, which grows with daily interest. Trump is fighting to overturn a judge's February 16th finding that he lied about his wealth as he fostered the real estate empire that launched him to stardom and the presidency. In addition to the $175 million he had to put up in the New York case, by the way, Trump has also posted a bond of cash worth more than $97 million to cover money he owes to writer E. Jean Carroll while he appeals the verdicts in a pair of federal civil trials for that. Juries found that he sexually assaulted her in the late 1990s and defamed her when she went public with the allegation. in 2019. All right.
Number two.
More on President Trump. A judge expanded a gag order yesterday against Trump in the New York criminal trial after Trump criticized the judge and his daughter in a series of social media posts. Acting New York Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan, who oversees this trial, expanded an existing gag order against Trump, preventing him from making public statements about the case, after he attacked Merchan's daughter in a post on Truth Social. More on that in a second. The conventional David versus Goliath roles are no longer in play, the judge said, as demonstrated by the singular power defendants' words have on countless others. The average observer must now, after hearing the defendants' recent attacks, draw the conclusion that if they become involved in these proceedings, even tangentially, they should worry not only for themselves, but for their loved ones as well. Such concerns will undoubtedly interfere with the fair administration of justice and constitutes a direct attack on the rule of law itself, the judge stated. Here's CNN's coverage of that.
Family is off limits. The judge overseeing Donald Trump's hush money trial just expanded a gag order forbidding the defendant and former president from attacking his own family and that of the district attorneys. A gag order was already issued last week, but it only outlawed Trump's tirades directed at witnesses, prosecutors, jurors, and court staff. It intentionally left out Judge Merchan, the judge's family, the DA, Alvin Bragg, and also Bragg's family as well.
So they're worried about the fact that Trump criticized Merchan's daughter, as if the daughter is some sort of a complete unknown or an irrelevant part of this. Judge Merchan's daughter is Lauren Merchan, who was the director of digital persuasion for Kamala Harris's 2020 presidential campaign. Also worked for the Biden-Harris 2020 campaign through a communications firm that provided services for progressive campaigns. She's not some innocent family member of the judge. She is a really sharp political operative. And when she takes shots at Trump, it is absolutely appropriate for Trump to take shots at her. So that judge, as far as I'm concerned, goes straight to hell with that nonsense.
Number three.
House Speaker Mike Johnson has doubts over whether President Biden even understood what he was doing when he issued the proclamation declaring March 31st, the same day as Easter, as the Transgender Day of Visibility. When asked during the White House Easter egg roll Monday about Johnson claiming on X that he, Biden, a reputed devout Catholic, betrayed Easter tenets, the president accused the speaker of being, quote, thoroughly uninformed, end quote, before retorting, "I didn't do that." However, the presidential document reads, "I, Joseph R. Biden Jr., do hereby proclaim March 31st, 2024, as Transgender Day of Visibility," end quote. So it's his own signature on the document. How could he possibly deny that he had done that? And the answer might be that he just didn't know. Here's Mike Johnson.
Well, it's his own signature on the document. That's why we posted it. The evidence speaks for itself, as we used to say in the courtroom. But look, it's highly possible that he doesn't even know what he's signing, Sean. I mean, that might be even more alarming. But I think this episode highlights what your two previous guests have already said. I think Vivek and Laura said it very well. This election is about showing the contrast between these two visions for America. And
Speaker Johnson is spot on. It is entirely possible that his staff slides things in front of his old shaking hand and said, "Put your JRB on this, please," and he signs whatever they give him. He may have been legitimately telling the truth when he said, "I didn't do that," because he might not know what he signed. That's literally possible. We're going to talk about that with Kirstenow a little bit later on this morning. By the way, it might be understandable if Biden did know what he was doing, why he would insist on this all-important Trans Day being held exactly when it was scheduled, even when it's on Easter, because it's not like there are other Trans Days, right? Oh, wait a minute.
He discovered Trans Days take up half the year. They have Transgender Day of Visibility, Transgender Day of Remembrance, Transgender Awareness Week, Trans Awareness Month, Transparent Day, International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia, Pride Month, LGBTQ History Month, LGBTQ Health Awareness Week, International Day of Pink, Day of Silence for Trans Bullying, Lesbian Visibility Week, Agender Pride Day, Harvey Milk Day, Pansexual and Panromantic Awareness Day, Stonewall Day, International LGBTQ Plus Day, International Non-Binary People Day, International Drag Day, Bisexual Awareness Week, Celebrate Bisexuality Day, International Lesbian Day, National Coming Out Day, Gender Fluid Visibility Week, International Pronoun Day, Spirit Day, Intersex Awareness Day, Intersex Day of Remembrance. I could go on.
But we won't. That's how many trans and LGBTQ days there are in the country, or months, or periods of time every single year, and they had to co-opt Easter. Unbelievable.
Number four.
Washington Mayor Muriel Bowser is thrilled that crime rates in D.C. are marginally lower than they were last year, when the crime rates hit historic highs after spiking crime in 2023. Sparked national headlines and prompted the Council of D.C. to pass emergency legislation, followed by another comprehensive bill passed last month. Bowser is now bragging and taking a victory lap about feeling good about the new trends. She said, quote, crime is down in all categories in Washington, D.C. In 2023, violent crime in D.C. increased by 39%. There were 959 carjackings, record high for the sixth year in a row. 274 homicides, highest in two decades. Property crime increased by 24%. Robberies by 67%. But then they went slightly lower this past year, and now she's happy about it. D.C. is not safe. Their elected officials deny that there's even a problem. Listen, as Mayor Bowser completely dodges this question on criminals in D.C., not even respecting the police due to her and her administration's no bail and no consequences policy.
If criminals aren't afraid of what's going to happen to them for minor crimes, that you know, and there's going to be a no bail release or they're not going to do any time, that they don't respect the police and they're not afraid. They're not, you know, they do whatever they want, basically, and becomes lawless. There's nothing to that?
Well, this is what I can tell you and what I have engaged my legislature with over the last year. And that's making sure what I call resetting our public safety ecosystem. That it is based in accountability, and it's based in giving people opportunities to go on the straight and stay on the straight and narrow.
You catch that? Not a single word of that made sense. The question is if criminals don't feel like they're going to have to do time, why would they stay on the straight and narrow? She said, they just will. You know what the whole thing smacks of? It's the inflation number. Biden increases inflation from 2.9% to 9.5%, then brags when it goes back down to about 3 to 4%. Wait, what? You increased it with your policies. You don't get to celebrate its decrease.
Number five.
A new autonomous zone, speaking of crime, but this is a little different. Remember the autonomous zone set up in Seattle in the defund and abolish police in 2020? This one has been set up in New York City on behalf of the Palestinian Hamas movement. The zone, which commandeers public property, boasts signs like "This is the People's Park," "No more cops," "No pigs allowed," etc. In summer 2020, similar zones set up in liberal cities across the country became breeding grounds for violence, drug use, and debauchery. In Seattle, a young man was killed. Activists refused to allow the police or an ambulance into their autonomous area to even render aid. Now they're doing the same thing in New York City in support of a terrorist group called Hamas. Those our New York values.
Number six.
Harvard has seen a huge decline in applications following all of the scandals involving their affirmative action and racist selection processes for applications, as well as anti-Semitism, plagiary, and diversity, equity, and inclusion programs. Applications declined more than 5% for the incoming class of 2028. This after the early admission applications fell 17%. That's a four-year low. The students that the top schools hope to attract, the ambitious, practical, and academically oriented ones, are clearly drawing the obvious conclusion. Harvard's brand isn't worth the cost. And Harvard's brand isn't worth the embarrassment and the shame that comes with being a part of it. All of U.S. higher education should use this as a lesson. If you don't kick the radicals off your campus and the school boards and shut down your DEI offices, you're going to lose students next.
Number 7.
The U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Department is now offering a third gender option to immigrants applying for citizenship or asylum. We have revised Form N-400, Application for Naturalization, to provide a third gender option, X, which is defined as another gender identity, one of many others. We are also updating guidance in the USCIS policy manual accordingly to account for this form revision and other forthcoming Form N-40 revisions. On or after April 1st, 2024, we will have X immediately available as a gender option on their forms. Anyone who submits an asylum claim with an X on it as their gender should be immediately rejected with a who knows as the reason, as far as I'm concerned anyway.
Number 8.
April 1st, yesterday, marked the one-year anniversary of Bud Light's partnership with Dylan Mulvaney. Last year, Mulvaney shared a video on his social media channel showcasing a customized Bud Light can to promote his transition to girlhood. The partnership sparked widespread criticism against Bud Light and the parent company Anheuser-Busch. Here's where we are 1 year later. Anheuser-Busch stock closed yesterday at 66.7. No, I'm sorry. The stock closed at 66.73 the day before the ad aired last year. Now, yesterday, 1 year later, it's at $60.89. That's an 8.75% decline in value. Normally, things like this come and go after a few days of protesting, but this hasn't gone away. It's a year later, and to put it in hard numbers, Bud Light and Anheuser-Busch, because of this, have lost $1.4 billion since partnering with the trans groomer. And finally,
number 9.
Longtime Democratic political operative behind a network of left-leaning propaganda media outlets masquerading as independent local news outlets is apparently kind of running the show in the Biden White House. Tara McGowan is the founder and the publisher of Courier Newsroom, visited the Biden White House nearly 20 times, according to White House record logs. She's the CEO and the founder of the Courier Newsroom's parent company, Good Information. That organization has received millions of dollars in funding from mega donors such as George Soros's Open Society Foundation. They provided vast amounts of cash to this organization and its leader, Tara McGowan, who has been with Joe Biden and his staff 20 times in the last 2 years. So what does that mean? Yes, the Biden White House is being run by and colluding with propaganda media working to help get him reelected, all funded by George Soros. And there you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, it is 9:28. We'll take a time out here. We'll come back. I've got open phone lines until Kersenow starts up at 10:10. So get in right now if you want to respond to any of the Top 9 at 9 or go off the board. 216-901-0944.
The Answer.
Okay, it's 9:35. Appreciate you being with us this Tuesday morning. Don't forget, we got Kersenow. Of course you wouldn't forget. How could you possibly forget a Kersenow day? Peter Kersenow will be joining us at 10:10, as he always does on Tuesdays. We're looking forward to that conversation. Pete and I are going to discuss a little bit more on what happened over the weekend with the Transgender Day of Visibility. We're also going to talk about this editorial that was run by the Cleveland Plain Dealer. This is the frustration that I think so many people have who are not rabid radicals, left-wing indoctrinated group thinkers. Because you don't even have to be a MAGA hat-wearing Trump train rider to recognize fairness and unfairness in media coverage of presidential candidates. And unless you're a rabid left winger who thinks that anything that is said about Donald Trump must be negative, you have to look at this and say, this isn't right. Well, Cleveland.com, a.k.a. the Cleveland Plain Dealer, just like their colleagues at the left-wing Washington Post, the left-wing New York Times, the left-wing Chicago Tribune, the left-wing Miami Herald, the left-wing San Francisco Chronicle, the left-wing Los Angeles Times, the left-wing Dallas Morning News, and on down the line it goes. The left-wing Cleveland Plain Dealer cannot possibly bear the thought of Donald Trump being president again. And as such, they cannot bear the thought of running anything that is remotely fair to Donald Trump in terms of their coverage. They want to slant the views and the opinions of every voter that reads their papers, all of them. And when some people point out, you know, this is ridiculous, why aren't you at least, you know, being fair in your criticism and condemnation and in your coverage, they actually double down. So Chris Quinn is the editor of the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Cleveland.com, and they ran an article on Saturday, or a, not article, an editorial on Saturday, explaining exactly what I think what I could say here, if I wanted to be fair and honest, is explaining what Trump derangement syndrome looks like in the media, because this is a display of Trump derangement syndrome. So since Pete and I are going to talk about this at 10:10, it might behoove you to hear a little bit about what was written. So I'm going to share this with you. A more than occasional arrival in the email these days is a question expressed two ways, one with dripping condescension and the other with courtesy. Why don't our opinion platforms treat Donald Trump and other politicians exactly the same way? Some phrase it differently, asking why we demean the former president's supporters and describing his behavior as monstrous, insurrectionist, and authoritarian. I feel bad for those who write. They believe in Trump and want their local news source to recognize what they see in him. The angry writers denounce me for ignoring what they call the Biden Family Crime Syndicate. I call it that. I'm glad to know Chris listens to the show. I didn't know anybody else worded it that way. And criminality far beyond that of Trump. They quote news sources of no credibility as proof the mainstream media ignores evidence that Biden, not Trump, is the criminal dictator. And I'm going to pause there and offer some obvious truths. The New York Post has more credibility than the Cleveland Plain Dealer could possibly even fathom trying to obtain. They were the ones who reported on the Biden laptop from hell. The Cleveland Plain Dealer dismissed it as being Russian propaganda. They joined the rest of the mainstream media in a blackout of all news coverage of the Biden family laptop that listed so many of their sins and so much evidence of their corruption. The New York Post ran it. Twitter, under the former ownership, shut the New York Post down, literally deleted their account. Nobody else would even touch it. So for this piece, Chris Quinn, editor at the Cleveland Plain Dealer, to condemn other news sources as having no credibility when they themselves surrendered all credibility they may have had is just beyond the pale. But it is not beyond surprising. Nothing surprises me when it comes to these lunatics. Back to the editorial. The courteous writers don't go down that road. They politely ask how we can discount the passions and beliefs of the many people who believe in Trump. This is a tough column to write because I don't want to demean or insult those who write me in good faith. I've started it a half dozen times since November, but turned to other topics each time because this needle is hard to thread. No matter how I present it, I'll offend some thoughtful, decent people. The North Star here is truth. We tell the truth. I wonder if he chuckled while he typed those words. We tell the truth, even when it offends some of the people who pay us for information. Nobody pays you for information, you political hack. Nobody pays your piece o' trash, left-wing, rag, burgeoning liner. Nobody pays you for information. They pay you for entertainment or for the lining of said birdcages. The truth, he writes, is that Donald Trump undermined faith in our elections in his false bid to retain the presidency. He sparked an insurrection intended to overthrow our government and keep himself in power. No president in our history has done worse. This is not subjective. We all saw it. Plenty of leaders today try to convince the masses we did not see what we saw, but our eyes didn't deceive. If the leaders began a years-long campaign today to convince us that the Baltimore Bridge did not collapse Tuesday morning, would you ever believe them? Trust your eyes. Trump on January 6th launched the most serious threat to our system of government since the Civil War. You know that. You saw it. I'm going to stop there because you need to. Once again, you festering, disgusting, repugnant, fetid pile O Chris Quinn and piece of plain dealer. Show me where Donald Trump and or any other American citizen has been charged with the crime of insurrection. I'll wait. Time's up. There is no charge of insurrection because despite what you say we all saw, we didn't see that. It didn't happen. If it did, they have charged some of the people who were at the riot at the Capitol, which was not, by the way, not fostered nor incited by Donald Trump nor any of the actual protesters who were there to what? Peacefully and patriotically make their voices heard. It was not fostered by them, but by the feds in the crowd and the police officers who turned their weapons on them and attacked so many of them, leading to what became a much more chaotic scene than ever needed to happen. But the reality is, not one of them. They've been charged with a lot of things. Trespassing in some cases, vandalism in other cases, and assault, sometimes accurate and sometimes wholly inaccurate as people defended themselves against attacks. But they've been charged with a lot of things. No one has been charged with insurrection. How can this guy, the editor of a major metropolitan newspaper like the Plain Dealer or the Plain Steamer, the Cleveland Steamer, Cleveland Plain Steamer, I can't keep the name straight sometimes. Cleveland Plain, something like that. How can they write that this was clearly an insurrection when not one single person has been charged with insurrection? Number two, how can they possibly sit there and write these words and publish them, suggesting that this was an attempt to overthrow the government? Who tries to overthrow a government by arming the guarded resistance of the Capitol? Because Donald J. Trump requested, and it has been proven and verified and corroborated, tried to provide 10,000 National Guard troops at the Capitol that day because he was smart enough to know that even if his supporters were going to go down there peacefully and patriotically, that protesters are always met with counter-protesters from Antifa and the like, and the likelihood is there would be violence. And so, therefore, he wanted to make sure the peace would be kept with a massive show, a display of probably unneeded force. They turned him down. Nancy Pelosi and Muriel Bowser, who make those decisions, wouldn't allow it. Who the hell tries to overthrow a government by strengthening the forces that would be protecting said government? Explain that to me, Chris Pile Quinn. Explain to me how an intended overthrow of the United States government could possibly be carried out without weapons. Without any weapons. No guns. No knives. Some people poked other people with flagpoles, particularly when they were getting pushed around. No weapons. And yet this piece of plain Cleveland Plain Steamer is trying to tell us that this was clear. This was not subjective. We all saw it. You know it. We saw it. What did we see? We see a figment of your imagination, Chris. He goes on to write, "The facts involving Trump are crystal clear. And as news people, we cannot pretend otherwise, as unpopular as that might be with a segment of our readers. There aren't two sides to facts. People who say the earth is flat don't get space on our platforms. If that offends them, so be it." Let me stop there again. There aren't two sides to facts. Tell me something, Editor Chris. Have you retracted your articles from 2020 in which you declared the Biden laptop to be Russian collusion, or not collusion, rather, Russian election interference? Have you retracted them? You declared it was complete propaganda from Moscow. No truth to it. Now that it has been proven, verified by everybody on the right and the left that, yes, it's real, and yes, there are a whole lot of Biden family sins that are recorded in that laptop, that the crackhead, whoremongering son of the president was too strung out on a coke high, or worse. Don't know if it was heroin or coke at that time. Dropped his laptop off for repair at a computer shop and totally forgot about it. And after 90 days, it became property of the laptop, repair shop. And he turned it in. You declared this to be complete propaganda, false, in your desperate attempt to make sure that Joe Biden would beat Donald Trump. You were willing to lie from the beginning to make sure Trump could not be president again. And this is long before January 6th. And that's why you are the Cleveland Plain Steamer. You're claiming that, well, we have to tell our readers the truth. And January 6th was clearly an insurrection incited by Donald Trump, an attempt to overthrow the government. You know it. You saw it. No president in history has ever done worse, you wrote. This was long before that day ever happened. You were lying about everything Trump and everything Biden in an attempt to convince Cleveland, Cuyahoga County, all of Ohio to flip and vote for Biden. Fortunately, the people of the state are smarter than that, and your dumbass attempts to lie and gaslight all Ohio voters failed as Trump won our state by 8 points. Again. And now you're trying to write revisionist history here, telling us that you, Chris Pyle O'Quinn, you are the arbiter of truth? Really? The facts are crystal clear, you say? Continuing the op-ed by the Cleveland Plain Steamer's editorial director or editor. As for those who equate Trump and Joe Biden, that's false equivalency. Biden has done nothing remotely close to the egregious anti-American acts of Trump. We can debate the success and mindset of our current president as we have about most presidents in our lifetimes, but Biden was never a threat to our democracy. Trump is. He is unique among all American presidents for his efforts to keep power at any cost. Personally, I found it hard to understand how Americans who take pride in our new system of government support Trump. All those soldiers who died in World War II were fighting against the type of regime Trump wants to create on our soil. How do they not see it? End quote. Let me go back to directing this Pyle O'Quinn once again. Correcting this Pyle O'Quinn. Biden has done nothing remotely close to the egregious anti-American acts of Trump. Biden was never a threat to our democracy. What is democracy? What is democracy? Chris, see if you can think back to your seventh grade social studies book and look up democracy. What is freaking democracy? Democracy is the system of government we use to allow the people to choose their leaders, to vote for their leaders rather than their leaders dictating to them who they shall be. How can the people vote and choose who are going to be their leaders? How can democracy happen if one of the two top choices who have been selected by those very people is removed from a ballot? How can the people have a fair say in deciding who they want to be their leader in the executive office, the most powerful position not only in our land but all the lands of the world? How can you claim that Biden is not a threat to democracy when he and his acolytes are trying to throw Donald Trump in jail, putting him in prison during a campaign cycle, trying to get him convicted of things that no other politician has ever been charged with, even though there is ample evidence of similar, if not identical, crimes, including the one of the current opponent of his, the incumbent Joe Biden? Just look at the document scandal. How can you claim, while Biden tries to lock up his political opponent, thereby robbing the people of their right to choose their president, that Biden is not the threat to democracy, but that Trump is? I mean, Chris Quinn, if you're in charge, if you're the best that the Cleveland Plain Steamer has, if you're all they have to choose from as the editor, the top dog, this thing is worse than I ever thought it could be. Honestly, You are a stampede of stupid, sir. The March 25th edition of the New Yorker magazine offers some insight. It includes a detailed review of a new book about Adolf Hitler focused on the year 1932. It's called Takeover, Hitler's Final Rise to Power, and it's historian by its historian Timothy Ryback. It explains how German leaders, including some in the media, thought they could use Hitler as a means to get power for themselves, and were writing to look past his obvious deficiencies to get where they wanted. In tolerating and using Hitler as a means to an end, they helped create the monstrous dictator responsible for millions of deaths. How are those German leaders different from the people in Congress saying the election was stolen or that January 6th was not an insurrection aimed at destroying our government? They know the truth, but they deny it. They see Trump as a means to an end, power for themselves and their team, even if it means repeatedly telling lies. Again, you pile of human waste. You collection of flotsam and jetsam. Comparing Donald Trump to Hitler again. Hey, idiot. He had 4 years. Point to the Hitlerian actions. It's not like this is new. It's not like this is an untested guy. Who knows what he'll bring? We are worried that he might be Hitler-esque. He served as president for 4 years. Point to the Hitler actions. Point to the Nazism takeover. As you sit here and try to spew forth this hate and this vile pile of lies, trying to make the American people who support constitutional conservatism, make them feel like they're Nazis supporting the modern day Hitler. How do you close your eyes and sleep at night? Maybe you don't. Maybe you lay awake at night thinking about more lies to write in your ridiculous, thankfully, ever-shrinking reach. The Plain Dealer's growth has been negative growth for 20 years now, which is why they only delivered a couple of days a week, why its circulation is so low, why they have to put everything that they print behind paywalls to try to generate money somehow. Thankfully, fewer and fewer people read this crap, your tripe, every single day. But it does not excuse the shame you should feel and you should receive for writing it. You are lying with every stroke of your keys on your keyboard, every single one of them. You have an obvious agenda, power, you say, for them and their team, power for you and your team. You and your left-wing, 99% left-wing staff at the Cleveland Plain Steamer, and the reason I know this is because it's the same 99% at every left-wing newspaper and mainstream media site, broadcast or print, in the country. They've done surveys. Maybe it's not 99, but it's between 95 and 99% of them. If they donate money, it goes to Democrats. 95 to 99% of the workers in these newsrooms, if they vote, they vote Democrat. They admit this when they are allowed to do so anonymously in surveys. The entire industry that you represent is radical, left-wing, borderline communist. And you are trying to claim that you are the defenders of democracy. You attack Donald Trump and try to make him Hitler in the eyes of your readers. You defend Joe Biden and try to take a guy who is so extraordinarily A, incompetent, B, corrupt, and C, racist. All of the things that you say Trump is, Joe Biden has put on display. His racism is not in question. Countless, not just now, but throughout his 50 years of government service in the United States Senate, vice presidency, and now the presidency. His constant racist statements are well known. His corruption is detailed on the laptop and has been brought out by associates of his families who have spoken to the amount of money that they have lifted from foreign companies and foreign countries who are adversarial to the United States of America while selling out access to the Obama White House, for crying out loud. And his lies. The man is a walking, talking citation of plagiarism. And yes, that is an oxymoron, because exactly what he does. He gives speeches and writes papers and does not give citations, thus making it plagiarism. He's a walking plagiarism. That's the reality. So for you to write this crap in the Cleveland Plain Steamer and think that anybody takes it seriously, let me show you what I'm going to do with it. This is how seriously I take it. Let me grab it. It's 9:57. I've got a break now. We're going to the news. And I'm going to the bathroom. This will come in very handy.
.com.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
Why do I feel like we've already entered that age of 1,000 years of darkness? Why do I feel like we're there right now? And if we're not there, we're on the precipice of falling into it, I suppose. And maybe the only opportunity to stop it and to maybe return to the light is in November. I don't know. I just kind of feel like we've talked to a number of different guests in recent days and weeks and maybe the last couple of months, I suppose, about end times. I swear it sometimes feels like that. I'm sorry. I'm just dwelling a little bit on President Reagan's words. That's the reason why we play him at the top of every hour in some form or another, because it does make you think and it does make you ponder exactly what we are, where we are, and how we got here and what we can do to avoid that kind of a fate. So sometimes it's inspiring. Sometimes it is just thought-provoking. This is a thought-provoking moment. All right, let's continue now. It is number two, 9 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock on this Tuesday, the second morning of the fourth month, the year of our Lord, 2024. And it's a Tuesday, and you know what that means. Tuesday is a Kersenow day. Peter Kersenow is with us. He's putting in overtime. He's thinking about, I was told he's thinking about moving a cot into the studio. He was with us on Tuesday last. He was with us, or with you, when I was in Tennessee. He was with you all day Thursday. He was there all day Friday. And did he beg off of today's regular Tuesday interview? He did not. He is here with us once again. Peter, my friend, thank you for being the warrior that you are. How are you, sir?
Doing pretty well, Bob, and thanks so much for, again, allowing me to jeopardize the FCC license of the station. It was just very enjoyable. I got a lot of nice emails from your fans. They were just so kind, especially one I'll point out is Linda from Scottsdale. I won't mention her last name. She and her husband sent me a very nice email, and I'm sure you get them yourself. As a lawyer, I generally don't get laudatory emails. I usually get threatening emails and all kinds of angry emails. So it's very nice to get those, and thanks for the opportunity. I think it's important. Look, Larry Elder says in our own little way on the radio, and yours is not a little way, yours is a big way, we've got a country to save. And you were talking about, the end times, and we're clearly going in the wrong direction. You talk to folks out there. I go around and speak all over the place. We've had Victor Davis Hanson and others who have an historical perspective, a very longitudinal perspective. And they're saying we're at a time we've never been before. This is a crucial period of time. This is a very, very dangerous period of time. And we've got to right the ship. And we need all hands on deck.
Yeah, I completely agree. It is a very, very dangerous time, and I question whether or not people really understand. We sometimes, Peter, are guilty in election cycles of saying the same thing again and again and again. This is the most important election of our lifetime, and it's as if it's just become kind of something to be taken for granted. But you know what? It is true, particularly in recent years. I would say probably over the course of the last 20 years or so. Every single cycle that has come up has been more important than the last, because I don't feel like we will just be able to undo any damage that is done by the results of one particular cycle. It's like, wow, the pendulum always swings this way, and then it always swings back in equal distance the other way. I don't think so anymore. I don't feel like we can take for granted the idea that, so what if Biden wins again? We'll correct everything, and he'll do so much damage that people will have no choice but to go the other way in 2028, and we'll be okay. Peter, I don't know if we're there in that place any longer. I feel like every single election cycle is not only the most important of our lifetimes, but the future of lifetimes to come.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I don't want to be, you know, hysterical or histrionic about it. But the fact of the matter is,
like,
you know,
I just
Mark
was?
Stein, no, not necessarily. No, I agree with you entirely. Mark Stein had this great elocution called the one-way liberal ratchet. That is, it seems as if we consistently, you know, they move the playing field or move the scales to one side just a little bit, maybe by increments, but then it stays there. It never goes back to where it was before. And I think we've moved to a point now where we're engaged in many cases, sheer lunacy, a dangerous kind of lunacy. And we think we're engaged in kind of magical thinking about, you know, if we spend more money into oblivion, we'll be okay, that there's a bottomless pit of money out there that we can access, that we don't have to be concerned about culture whatsoever. Culture is immaterial. We can do whatever we want to with the culture because we're smart. And we're, you know, we're human beings of unsurpassable intellect. This is lunacy. And, you know, the Transvisibility Day, what one of the things that's incredible about that is, well, let me back up. You know, on the Civil Rights Commission, we see a lot of things, as I've said before, that if you want to know what the left has planned for the United States 5 years from now, come to a Civil Rights Commission hearing today, because that's where they try out everything. And I've been right in that. They've tried out things at the Civil Rights Commission. Next thing you know, it's being shoved into the mainstream, just lunatic ideas. But one of them that I think that people have asked me, okay, what's the next thing they're going to do? And people don't believe me, and I talk about, you know, matters with respect to pedophilia. And we're, you know, people in just a couple years ago would say, what? Come on. Now, they wouldn't try that. But now I think if you look around, you're starting to see a little bit of erosion around the perimeter related to the guards, the guardrails against such things. And we see a lot of bizarre things. The attack on religion is incredibly hostile. And I didn't even realize, even though I've been on the commission for over 20 years, I didn't realize how hostile progressives are, and I don't mean all progressives, okay? And whenever I say that, you know, I usually get emails, oh, I'm not one of those, and I recognize that. But the progressive movement has an almost unhinged hostility to religion because religion is one of the bulwarks against their enterprise, and they recognize that. They recognize that for hundreds of years, the progressive movement has. And they want to denigrate religion, tear it down, and kind of turn it upside down to say good is bad and bad is good. I remember we had a hearing about 10 years ago, and it was at my request because I had seen certain changes in what was going on in the zeitgeist. And so we had multiple panels of witnesses, and I was stunned by the hostility toward religion mainly from leftist academics. You would not believe it. They think religion is the greatest evil on earth. But, you know, as it was once said, you know, without God, all things are possible, you know, or all things are permissible. And I think that's true. They keep pressuring the boundaries and trying to expand what's considered to be, quote-unquote, normal, to the detriment of society at large, but mostly, I think, to the detriment of our kids. And it's a disgusting enterprise. It's an alarming enterprise, but it goes to what you were saying about how, you know, look, things are getting dark, and there's no escaping that, and we shouldn't be sugarcoating this. As Larry says, we've got a country to save, but it's more than a country, actually. It's an entire civilization.
Yeah, well, you're right. And, you know, I kind of talked about I'm glad you brought up religion. And how it is, you know, the enemy of the other side, if you will. And I'm glad you brought up kids, because I want to talk a little bit about this Trans Day of Visibility that was used to co-opt and essentially hijack Easter from Christians. I said this yesterday, and I tweeted about it and posted about it over on social media. And I know you don't do that, but I did it on Easter Sunday. That this is a big middle finger that Biden has extended not only to all Christians in America, and that's why I'm going to follow up here, but to all around the world. As you just said, it's more than just our country to save. It's a civilization, because it's all under attack by those, and including those you know, sheep who wear wolves' clothing, or I'm sorry, wolves who wear sheep's clothing, because Joe Biden pretends to be a Catholic. Joe Biden pretends to be a Christian. Joe Biden sends his vice president to Planned Parenthood clinics to salute and pat on the back those butchers and barbarians who are killing innocent, defenseless babies on a regular basis. Joe Biden tells people that the Resurrection Day that we all celebrate, those of us who are Christian, not only in this country and around the world, should take a back seat, because he didn't issue a big, long proclamation celebrating the risen Lord. He issued a proclamation celebrating the Trans Day of Visibility. So, Peter, you're right. It is not just a country. It is a civilization that needs to be saved. And I'm trying to figure out the role that faith will play in that. I asked all the listeners yesterday to tell me how much of a role faith will play. I did the Prager show yesterday, too, and I said, the people around the country, how much of a role will your faith play in your decision in November about the direction of this culture?
Yeah, I think, you know, among conservatives / Republicans, faith is the chief driving force, and you will see the faithful come out to vote for Trump, and the faithful, because they are faithful, understand certain things about Trump's flaws that the left likes to magnify, if not create. And they understand that he is a human being. But, you know, I just simply go back to 4 years ago, everything from A to Z, every measurable, every metric that a president has the ability to affect was better, every single one. And then they raise this specter of he's a threat to democracy. And I always ask, I don't just stop and listen to their rhetoric about threat to democracy. I say, be specific, tell me what. They always go to January 6th, okay? And we can talk about that for a long time, and I can pick apart everything as I would in an oral argument. But nonetheless, Trump's words with respect to January 6th said, we are going to go to the Capitol and protest peacefully and patriotically. Mm-hmm. And yet they go nuts about that. Yet they don't talk about virtually every Democratic president in the last 30 years, if they lose, has gone absolutely ballistic, with the assistance of the media, by the way, in challenging an election, challenging it more forthrightly, more aggressively than Trump ever did. You know, they may have forgotten about Al Gore. They may have forgotten about Hillary Clinton and the faithless electors and all the other things going on. I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but they need to remember those kinds of things. But they don't, because the entirety of the mainstream media simply regurgitates these talking points that, number one, are false or exaggerated, but are clearly biased toward one side, and then that becomes the narrative. And almost everybody then starts to accept it. That's something that's occurred in other countries. You didn't expect it necessarily to happen in this country. The media has always been biased, but now it is completely divorced from any kind of impartiality. Now is solely the instrument of the progressive wing. And so we're getting these distortions. We're getting these assaults on democracy. We're getting these assaults on just general decency. And the assault on Easter, for example. Holy Week, there may be a little bit of a debate as to which is the holiest day in the calendar. In the liturgical calendar. Is it Good Friday or is it Easter? I'm not going to get into that type of debate, but we know that those 2 days are the most important in the Christian calendar, the most important in civilization, and yet they mock it, they try to erase it, they denigrate it, and they could have changed, for example, the date of Transvisibility Day, because, first of all, there's 7,000 days marked for trans visibility or trans this, trans that. Every day is a trans day. But there's only one Easter per year, just one. And it is a holy day, and yet they mock it. They did so, in my estimation. You can't miss this. You cannot miss this. This was an intentional thumb in the eye of believers. And they consistently mock the religious. They are the party, the progressive party. Now, I'm not saying there's no faithful among progressives, rank and file. That's not what I'm saying. But it is uncontrovertible that the leadership is hostile to religion, will denigrate it, if not eliminate it, at every turn, just as, and again, I'm not drawing any equivalencies here, but in the same fashion that every totalitarian regime in the past has done, especially the communists. They understood that if you had a faith in a supreme being, you would not have faith in the government as the sole arbiter of what is good and bad. And that is a danger to any party that believes that to be the case and relies upon that in order to move their agenda forward. So bottom line is the Biden administration, the good news is I think the Biden administration, by their reprehensible actions, have alienated even those who may have had scales on their eyes. I don't mean to be biblical there, but even those who, you know, try to give them the benefit of the doubt. It may not be Biden himself, because I think he's too addled to figure out what happened on Sunday, but it's his...
Pete, before you finish that thought, you're not the only one who had it. Did you hear Speaker Johnson yesterday? Listen to this.
Well, it's his own signature on the document. That's why we posted it. The evidence speaks for itself, as we used to say in the courtroom. But look, it's highly possible that he doesn't even know what he's signing, Sean. I mean, that might be even more alarming. But
Mike Johnson on Hannity last night was asked about, you know, Biden's denial when Biden said, "I didn't do that. I didn't sign a proclamation to declare this the Trans Day of Visibility over Easter." You know, and then as Speaker Johnson said, "Your name is on the proclamation that reads, 'I, Joseph R. Biden, do declare or do proclaim,' blah blah blah." And he's saying maybe he didn't know. And I have to ask that question seriously of myself, and I'm asking you now: how many documents do you think that his staff, you know, slide in front of him and say, "Sign here, sir," and his shaky little hand puts his little JRB on it because he can't process it all. He's sleepy. He can't focus. He's tired. He's cognitively declining. All of these things. I wonder if he even knew what he was signing yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Or, I'm sorry, Sunday.
I think that there are a number of things that he signs that, first of all, he didn't initiate these things, okay? And that's not something peculiar to Biden. Most presidents are so busy that they have staffs that look at different things. They, you know, proclamations and things of that nature are drafted by, you know, various personnel within the White House office, and then they are given to the president. But almost every other president was aware of what they were signing. They were, you know, they'd look at it and say, "No, I can't sign this," or they'd make tweaks there. I mean, we saw... there used to be footage of everyone from, I think, Kennedy to Nixon to even Trump, who would be examining a document and deciding they can't sign it, okay, or they would make certain edits to it. Not Biden. I believe that Biden may be, I don't think he initiated this, but that doesn't mean he wasn't on board with it. And I believe that he is so, he's impaired enough that he doesn't understand the ramifications of something like this. Catholic Joe Biden is that impaired that he thinks that this proclamation wouldn't have any political ripples. You would think somebody who's been in politics his entire life would recognize, aside from whether it's right or wrong, good or bad, that it would engender political peril in an election year. And yet he was not sufficiently cognitively alert to understand that and signed his name to it. The folks around in the White House, not everyone, but a lot of them, are the most radical we've ever had, more so than in the Obama administration. A lot of them are Obama holdovers, but nonetheless, they are true believers. They are true progressives, and they would like nothing better than to erase vestiges of religion. It's hard for many of us, I'll speak for myself, until, you know, my quarter century on the Civil Rights Commission, I would never have believed the depth of the enmity that the left has toward religion. Again, the people who actually make the decisions, the people who actually forward the progressive agenda, these people are enormously hostile to religion, and I was baffled by it, and I still remain baffled by it, but it's infiltrated and infested this administration, and would almost any progressive administration, and it's a driving force for their policy prescriptions. We need to be aware of that, and to the extent, you know, it's easy for them, with the assistance of a uniform media that walks in lockstep with them, to convince many of the American people that, you know, what I just said is a bunch of bunk. They control the airwaves, they control all the institutions, because they know it presents political peril to them. But, you know, I'm here to tell you, from what I've seen, it is absolutely 100% the case, and we need to wake up before we forever lose not just, you know, our democratic enterprise, but our culture and all that makes us unique as individuals here in the United States of America in 2024.
Peter Kersenau is our guest. Terrific analysis. You know, the religious aspect of this, again, is one thing if you have somebody who is openly antagonistic toward religion. It's another for a man to say, I am a devout Catholic. I go to church every Sunday. I take my communion, and then I go and trash our God and our Savior. That's a different story altogether. Pete, we'll take a time out here. We're going to come back and talk about the religion of anti-Trumpism. I think, you know, they call Trump world being in a cult. If you're MAGA, you're in a cult. I think you are in a religious cult if you are part of the Trump derangement syndrome class. The Cleveland Plain Dealers editor made that clear in a ridiculous piece that he wrote over the weekend. I'm going to get your comments on that as we continue on Always Right Radio, AM 1420.
The Answer.
10:35 now. We do continue on AM 1420. The Answer. That little glitch and hiccup during the spot set that you just heard, that's courtesy of Seth Williams, who I'm relatively convinced probably would not have made that mistake had he had four functioning limbs. So it is National Limb Loss Awareness Week. So
apologize for that. My fake leg got in the way.
Yeah, it has to be something. It has to be something. I'm not sure. If you're going to take credit for, and let's bring Kersenau in, put him up. Hey, Pete, did you know that after Sunday's Trans Day of Visibility, did you know that yesterday, starting on April 1st, not an April Fool's joke, was the start of Limb Loss and Limb Difference Awareness Month? Did you know that was a thing?
I confess I did not know that.
I did not either. But now we are forced to pay homage to Seth Williams, who is sans one leg and hopping around on a pogo stick. And we have to give him credit every single day. And he's expecting free gifts, by the way, because that's what happens when you are part of a group.
Yes, and I'm quite offended that both of you did not know about my month.
So. It's your month.
Everybody
well, that's how it works.
This is my month, yes.
Yeah, it's his month, and you know, and I don't know exactly what it takes to get a month. Do you have to be just different than everybody else in some measurable way? I mean, I really don't know. I didn't know that there was a Limb Loss Awareness Month, but here it is, and a Limb Difference Awareness Month. I mean, that's just you're different. I mean,
please get right, Limb Difference
Month. Anybody can have a month, it would appear. Did you watch Jesse Waters yesterday, Peter, by chance on Fox?
No, I didn't. I didn't have a chance.
I know most of us kind of swore off Fox News when they did what they did to Tucker, but, you know, it's still a place to go for some things that you're not going to see on MSNBC and so forth. just to kind of put to bed this conversation that we're having over this Trans Day of Visibility and how Biden, a supposedly devout Catholic, gave a big, long, stirring proclamation in support of the transgender community instead of giving a strong proclamation to Christians about the risen Lord. To put it to bed here, the creator of this day is a trans dude. He thinks he's a female, I guess, who named this March 31st the National Day of Trans Visibility about 15 years ago. Whoever it is just declared it to be such. Literally a nobody whose name I can't remember other than I think he goes by maybe Cheryl or something now. I don't know. But I watched a clip of him yesterday talking about how he invented it. And then it just somehow got up the chain of command all the way to the president of the United States, who proclaims it is indeed the National Day of Visibility. And we're talking about, well, fine, if you're going to name one of these things, but why do you have to do it on Easter? And, you know, and they say, well, it's March 31st, Easter just happened to fall. Okay, well, then move it this year, because you should not detract from Easter Sunday. And come to find out, Peter, that this guy picked his day for transgender visibility strategically between November, in which there is a National Trans Remembrance Day, and I don't know, something else that was in January, but he wanted it to be far enough apart from both of those that it would have its own special recognition. In other words, there are so many days of trans recognition and visibility that it's really hard to kind of, you know, give them each their own separate time. So yesterday, Jesse did this just to kind of really underscore the point, Pete, and I'll let you react to it.
He discovered trans days take up half the year. They have Transgender Day of Visibility, Transgender Day of Remembrance, Transgender Awareness Week, Trans Awareness Month, Transparent Day, International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia and Transphobia, Pride Month, LGBTQ History Month, LGBTQ Health Awareness Week, International Day of Pink, Day of Silence for Trans Bullying, Lesbian Visibility Week, Agender Pride Day, Harvey Milk Day, Pansexual and Panromantic Awareness Day, Stonewall Day, International LGBTQ Plus Day, International Non-Binary People Day, International Drag Day, Bisexual Awareness Week, Celebrate Bisexuality Day, International Lesbian Day, National Coming Out Day, Gender Fluid Visibility Week, International Pronoun Day, Spirit Day, Intersex Awareness Day, Intersex Day of Remembrance. I could go on.
So, Peter, as you can see, there is such a dearth of days recognizing these people for all of their various proclivities. I mean, of course it had to happen on Easter, right? I mean, now you understand.
Yeah, and, you know, I was aware of some of those. I think my favorite was International Pronouns Day. The famous and great science fiction writer Robert Heinlein has this period that's called the Crazy Years. It's a period on Earth where things go absolutely nuts before there's societal collapse. And, you know, that was science fiction. Now we've adopted science fiction, and maybe we're on the verge of collapse. I'm not sure, but I think it's an indication of where our culture is. The culture is now frivolous. Look, even if you were to commemorate, you know, the notion of being trans, I think one day is probably enough, and one day would be, frankly, a more potent commemoration than having virtually every day some trans remembrance. But it also goes back to what's the agenda here. If you've got 55 trans days, what's going on? Why are you commemorating something that concerns, you know, less than 1% of the population, frankly? We've got Black History Month. We've got all these.
If I may, because it doesn't anymore. That was the point that I made on yesterday's show and on Prager 2. You know, 20 years ago, it was less than one half of 1% of the population that had something called gender dysphoria, or gender, I think they used to call it gender identity disorder or something. But it was less than one half of the 1% of the population. But now it's, you know, 20 to 25% of school classrooms. It's 40% in others. It's right. Because of the social contagion of it all. These people don't all have the rare psychological condition of gender dysphoria, but they think they do, and they've been convinced that it's smart for them to do so if they want credit and clout and friends and attention. So that's why. I mean, that is the sole reason why, because this never used to be celebrated before it became a popular thing to have.
Yeah, you kind of stole my thunder. That's the direction I was going.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
No, exactly.
Sometimes
no,
I don't know when you're bringing thunder and when you're not. So, that's my bad.
But the fact of the matter is that there's this push. There's overtly a push, and it's been somewhat successful. I mean, when I was in school, frankly, you know, back in the Mesozoic era, nobody ever heard about this stuff. And are you trying to tell me that there's this latent desire among huge percentages of the population to stop, you know, start becoming trans or to, you know, hack off body parts? And I don't mean to be, you know, callous about it, but there's an agenda here. We have to recognize, and I think most of the audience knows, that almost everything that comes from the left has an agenda associated with it. Is it, you know, they're trying to move the country and their enterprise more leftward, and so we're pummeled by every single day trans this, trans that, there, and whatever else hobby horse they're on for that particular week. And we think that sometimes, well, you know, what the heck, it's innocuous, it's just one day, it's not a big deal. But if you look at the incremental fashion in which society is being moved in a certain direction, look at where we are today compared to before, and my major concern is with kids. I don't think we're doing a whole lot today that really favors kids, and that means that our culture is going to be completely, completely bastardized at some point. And culture is in advance of government and civilization. Culture comes before politics. We're going to be moving in a direction we won't be able to recognize. This won't be a good direction. It may be a direction that Caligula and others might recognize, but not us. And, you know, the nation was founded, and the founding fathers understood that our Constitution was a very fragile document, and the manner in which our republic was structured was very, very fragile. And it would not survive without a moral people. You know, when it was asked, what have you given us? A republic, if you can keep it. Well, it depends on the underpinnings of civilization. This is a fragile experiment that we've got here, and right now the progressives are taking a steamroller to it because the progressive enterprise is antithetical to the way in which the United States of America was constructed. The progressive enterprise is far closer to what we see in the totalitarian regimes of, say, the old Soviet Union. If you read Marx at all, and nobody does, people just casually throw the term Marx around. When it was assigned reading, either in high school, probably in honors classes, because, you know, heck, they don't read anything else anymore, or in college, you know, no one dwelt upon it. It was just simply something that, you know, frankly, I believe most today in academia try to promote. But this is something that I think we need to keep an eye on, something that is alarming. We've moved the ball way too far in one direction, and we're not going to recover. And if we don't recover, again, my major concern is, yes, with our culture, our civilization, but I think our kids, we already see now all of these statistics that indicate that, and they're amazing to me, that all these kids have mental problems, emotional problems. They all need to seek counseling. What happened? We now have the easy, and maybe this is the problem. we've got more material goods. We've got greater health. We've got all these things that we never had before. Kids don't have to physically struggle or struggle in any excuse me, monetary fashion to the extent they did, say, even 50 years ago. But half of them now have got some kind of mental illness. That's not by accident.
No, it is absolutely not. It is intentional. You're exactly right. And I'm sorry, like I said, for getting ahead of you there a little bit, but it is disturbing to me, and this was the focus of my show yesterday, or largely anyway, was that less than one half of 1% in the span of 20 years' time has become such a massive, massive problem here because it is intended to be such, and there is an agenda there. And of course, the agenda is it's kind of laid bare. It is to normalize that which used to be considered deviant. It is to normalize it. And the only way to do that is to get more members. The bigger, the larger the crowd, you know, the old safety in numbers argument. The more of you there are, the less they can minimize you or marginalize you, and thus the more power you have. So they're trying to grow their numbers by creating fake diagnoses of gender dysphoria and thus transitioning into other identities. And it's repugnant. Okay, Pete, let's move on. This is equally repugnant. Before you came on, I read to our audience the letter that was written by, the editorial, from editor Chris Quinn of the Cleveland Plain Dealer, in which he declared on Saturday that there are two-sided coverage of the presidential candidates. When I say two-sided, I guess what I should say is two-faced. Their positive, glowing coverage of everything Joe Biden and their constant negative coverage of everything Donald Trump. He's responding to criticism of some of the readers who have noticed it and said, we're kind of sick of it. It is one of the most ridiculous, inaccurate pieces of journalism, and I realize it's an editorial, it's not an actual news article, so he can be as opinionated as he wants, but it really did pull back the curtain on how they do their news coverage at the Plain Dealer on the news pages. When you get away from the editorial page where they're supposed to be unbiased and just present the facts and let the people take from it what they will, this kind of pulled the curtain back as to who they are and what their agenda is here. So, Pete, I know you've read it. People, our listeners, have already gotten my take on it. Let's hear yours.
Yeah, I didn't know you had addressed it. But, yeah, I don't read the Plain Dealer. I stopped reading it about 15, 20 years ago. We used to get it, no longer get it. It used to be one of my pleasures, you know, get the physical paper, and I'd go to the sports page. But nonetheless, this is an astonishing admission on the part of a news organization. It's an admission as to how what we have noticed, and that is how the news media has been utterly corrupted. They don't give us objective reporting anymore. Look, if we need editorializing, the place for that used to be the editorial page, but we no longer see that. We know that most of the media now is on the left, and not just a little bit to the left of center, way to the left, but they don't realize it because from their vantage point, they look like they're in the middle. They're among their friends. But the objectivity is completely gone. It used to be that you would report the facts, not, you know, embellish the facts, not tilt them anyway, and let the reader decide, not the editor. But now we've gotten to the point where the editorial determinations have infiltrated, completely corrupted the reporting of the news, reporting of purported facts. We're not getting that anymore. And to the discrete point of why Trump is such a threat who needs to be reported on differently than anybody else, this is amazing to me. And again, these guys are operating in their own environment. They don't even hear themselves. They're in this echo chamber that precludes any other opinions, any other objective evidence. And I mean, this is an astonishing admission. Even though we know it, it's an admission. You generally don't get them admitting something this dumb. Did he at all notice, I mean, Trump as a threat to democracy? He may have noticed that it was just a few years ago when Hillary Clinton had marshaled the entire Democratic apparatus to challenge an election. Remember the faithless electors and all the other mechanisms they utilized that were far more intrusive and dangerous than anything Trump did on January 6th, where he merely said, we're going to go peacefully and patriotically to make our voices known. That's all. And some people went too far. And I'm not countenancing that at all. But we know January 6th, but there's been this kind of mythology that has been generated around it so that they could constantly demonize one set of people or one group of people and, more importantly, their ideas to completely denigrate and make reprehensible to ordinary good people their ideas. He missed a lot there, a heck of a lot. Did he miss, you know, again, Al Gore, who disrupted the country for about, you know, I don't remember how long it was now, 2 months or so, all the turmoil that we went through every time.
And then was livid when the Supreme Court finally put an end to it.
Right. Every Democrat, at least in the last 30 years and maybe more, that has lost a national election has gone absolutely nuts with the willing assistance of the media.
Yes.
They've gone, and then they bury it and forget what happened. But when Trump says, hey, wait a minute here, you know, we think there's some problems here. Oh, my goodness. All you hear is January 6th, January 6th, January 6th. The only thing I have to run on, because all of their policies stink on steroids and do enormous damage to the United States of America. Look at every metric, whether it's immigration, gas price, you name it, inflation. Everything is worse now. And it's done, it's worse, not because of the vicissitudes of, you know, global economics or anything else, but because you can draw a straight line from some policy they've implemented into some catastrophic calamity that is befalling the American people. This is the fact that they miss that tells me that that alone says it's not worthy of your time, not worthy reading. But it's truly an astonishing admission on his part. If you thought, look, if you want to continue reading the sports page, you know, and I've stopped reading it because the Browns have not yet put me in for one play. But there are better outlets than this. But you know what? In many respects, he's done the American people or the Clevelanders and, frankly, the plain dealer service. He's at least admitted what they're doing. At least he's coming clean that this is not something where you're going to get straight news. Okay, this is something where you're going to get biased. This is a Biden or progressive rag. And that's the way I look at it. That's the way I've always believed it to be. And it's a little bit refreshing that they finally admit it.
Yeah. And you know, it's for us. It's important because we've known it for a long time to hear them admit it as a kind of a finally. But to those who don't do what we do for a living, you know, who don't, you know, you serve on the Civil Rights Commission and you practice law and you're kind of in the middle of the culture, in the middle of all of the news every day. You're a student of it. I do it because of what I do every day. For those who don't know, I think it's important. But it's equally important for them to not only read what he wrote, pulling back the curtain and making an admission of what their agenda is, but it's also important for you to do what you just did, to tear it apart line by line, to do what I did an hour ago, tear it apart line by line. Because those who don't do what we do for a living may not know the facts. They're going to believe some of the stuff that he wrote in there in his admission. They're going to believe that Trump did indeed, you know, participate in and organize and incite an insurrection. They're going to believe all of the garbage that we just talked about. So it's important for not only for it to run to, you know, be the admission, but for us to say, just so everybody knows exactly what he's admitting to. You know, take this information, share it with others, let them know that if you're looking for a real, honest look at, and I'm trying to find another way to say that, if you're looking for an honest, objective guidance to decide, to help you decide how to vote, and if you trust people in the news to help you make those decisions, you're not going to get that honest, objective look from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. You're not going to get the guidance you seek, and people need to know that, Pete. That's extremely important. That's why I'm glad
we're
talking.
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree with you, and it deserves emphasis, as you've indicated. One of the things that struck me about it is, when you sit back and think, and I've said on your show several times that people like, say, a Tucker Carlson make me revisit my previously held assumptions. That doesn't necessarily mean I'll agree with them, but it makes me rethink what I had thought for a long time, and I think that's a healthy thing. What's kind of impressive about this is he admits that he's getting letters from readers about what they perceive to be one-sided coverage, and instead of thinking about that, maybe calibrating their coverage or responding to that in a way that suggests that, you know, maybe we should take into consideration what's going on. Maybe we are going a little bit to one side. No, he doubles down and explains why they're being biased. You got to give him credit. It's truth in advertising, at least. He's coming out and saying, yes, we are biased. You're not going to get the straight news from us. We're going to solve the wounds of progressives and make sure they feel good about all the damage that progressives are doing, and we're also going to make them feel good because we know all of our progressive leaders hate Donald Trump regardless of what he's ever done. So we're going to do that. That's the kind of organ we are. We are not a straight news reporting organization anymore, and it's good to have an admission like that.
Absolutely right. And the reality is they should all kind of maybe run this. And I'm talking, when I say they all, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Miami Herald, the Los Angeles Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, and on and on and on and on. All of them are the same exact papers doing the same exact things. And I really wish they would all say, by the way, just so you know, if you hate our coverage of it, too bad. This is what we're doing. Don't look to us if you're looking for unbiased guidance and advice and information on how to decide who our leaders are going to be. Don't do it because we're not providing it. I want all of them to run that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Bob. And again, it's a refreshing and candid admission. So now anyone who reads The Plain Dealer, if they ever had any doubt, I don't know how you would, knows that their news coverage is governed by their editorial slant. You know that, okay? So every time you read it, then you can read that article and decide, okay, what is the real truth here? This time you no longer have to guess. So I think, you know, he deserves kudos. Most editors would not admit something like that, so he deserves kudos for that. We are a leftist rag. Okay, go ahead. Get your readers then.
There it is. And it's exactly. And by the way, you know what I was talking, mockingly pointing out the fact that they don't even deliver The Plain Dealer every day anymore. Their readership is so far down. Their revenues are so far down. You cannot click on one of their stories online if you choose to without having to hitting a paywall because they're so desperate. It's kind of equal parts good news and bad news. The good news is his readership is so small anymore, and their paper's readership is so small anymore, they have very little impact on people anyway. But then, of course, the flip side of that is we do want people to know the reality that they have admitted who they are and what they do. So some will see it, some will not. They have much less influence than they have ever had before, and I guess that's a good takeaway from it. Peter Kersenow, man, you've put in the time, my friend. Thank you for Thursday and Friday last week. Thank you for this morning, as always. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, buddy. There you go. That's Kersenow. It's AM 1420, The Answer. We're going to take a time out here, top of the hour. We're going to come back. And we're going to talk about other news, the kind that's in social media. If you can call social media a form of media, and I guess you can, should kids have access to it? The types of things that are in social media now is so devastatingly dangerous. Governor Ron DeSantis and the state of Florida have passed a bill that he has signed that outlaw social media for kids under the age of 14. Our next guest is going to talk about whether that's good policy or bad. Stay here. Always Right Radio, AM 14.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, it is indeed, and hour number three is underway, 7 minutes past 11 o'clock. Great education provided for us by Peter Kersenow last hour. Great conversation in hour number one as well, and I certainly look forward to the one we have coming up now. It is the second morning of the fourth month of the year of our Lord, 2024. About a week and a half or so ago, Governor Ron DeSantis, America's best governor, continues to take down the radical left, and he does so in some extraordinary ways, not just with the left, but just criminals. He is declaring squatting to be a state crime. It's not going to be a civil matter in Florida. No more people robbing other people's homes. It still blows my mind. I've never understood that. I'm sorry to get off on a tangent. Super quick, though. You get in my car and drive it away, you're arrested for grand theft auto. You get in my house and don't let me in to take it back. You're not threatened, or you're not charged with grand home, grand theft home, or whatever you would want to call it. You're now a squatter. You've stolen a house, but you're squatting in it. You're claiming yourself to be the rightful resident, and I've got to go to court after months and months and months, by the way, to prove that it's my house and to make you leave. I've never understood it. It's a huge problem. We've got people coming up from Venezuela as part of the massive crush of illegal aliens, going on camera and telling other people what to do. Here's how you find where to live. Look for people who aren't in their houses. Maybe they're vacation homes. Maybe they're, you know, they're snowbirds. They have half year here, half year there, and they're not being used. You can go in and you can actually stay, and they'll let you stay now. And it's incredible. The entire squatting phenomenon is something I have never understood, nor will I ever understand. But what I do know is that Governor Ron DeSantis took that on as well and is completely changing the system in Florida. He just continues to do phenomenal things. It makes me wish he could do bigger things. But at any rate, one of the other things he did was about a week or two ago, he got a bill passed through the Florida legislature that he signed that essentially says kids under the age of 14 cannot be on social media. The bill bans social media accounts for children under 14 and requires parental notification and permission for 14 and 15. It's a slightly, according to the NBC article, it's a slightly watered down version of a proposal that he vetoed earlier last month, a week before their annual legislative session ended then. The new law was Republican Speaker Paul Renner's top legislative priority. It takes effect, I guess it would be January 1st of next year. A child in their brain development doesn't have the ability to know that they're being sucked into these addictive technologies and to see the harm and step away from it. And because of that, we have to step in for them. End quote. That was from the Speaker Paul Renner. This is what Governor Ron DeSantis had to say on the Hannity show.
So last year, we did a bill that I signed that said school districts could say no cell phones during class time. There was a huge uproar about that. People were saying that somehow this was, you know, too restrictive. And yet what's happened this school year, the kids are learning better. Everyone's happier because the attention is on what's happening in the classroom. I'd also say, just as a parent, my wife and I have talked about this. Our kids are too young to have any phones. We've decided that when they do get a phone, probably not going to be a smartphone. It's going to be one of those old flip phones that we used to have where they can make a call if they need anything from us. But we don't have to worry about all the hundreds of different apps. And here's the thing, Sean, too. Apart from all the really significant harms with the predators, it's not healthy to have kids buried in their phones 8 hours a day.
It's not. He's right. It's not healthy to have kids buried in their phones 8 hours a day. We do have to step in for them because they don't know what they're doing. But is it the right policy for government to tell kids and parents exactly what they can look at and what they can't? That's the question being asked by our guest. Jason Shepherd is the founder of Wimkin Social Media. He's an entrepreneur and a free speech advocate who has launched numerous social media platforms to provide alternatives to combat big tech censorship. We, of course, here are opposed to big tech censorship. So how do we address this issue when it's big government censoring certain content from minors? Jason Shepherd, thank you for joining us this morning. How are you?
I'm great, Bob. Thank you so much for having me. I hope you're the same.
Yeah, we are. We're doing great. Well, personally, as a country, not so much. Sorry, that's just an aside. So, Jason, let's get your response to what you understand this bill in Florida to be and what Governor DeSantis just said and the speaker in Florida just said about the reasons why this is a necessary thing to keep some of this stuff away from the kids.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you explained it very well. I know if, I wish we could do the squatting thing as well, because that blows my mind just as much as this does. But, I mean, you know, I think DeSantis, like you hit on that, he's 100%, I believe, America's best governor. There's no doubt about that. Now, it was surprising to me, Bob, to actually see DeSantis put this into play, because he is an individual that says parents should parent their children, of course, and, you know, have everything, every right to be in their school education, you know, what the curriculum is, and obviously govern their kids the way that they see fit. So it was a bit surprising for me to see this at 14. You know, essentially you're starting to look at colleges at this point in time. You know, these 14-year-olds have been on social media probably for, at this point in time, probably some 5-6 years, I would imagine. Now, it's very hard for me as a, you know, I 100% protect the First Amendment. I think it's an incredible, everything is fundamentally down to the First Amendment. And this is where you're going to see this get challenged by Net Choice, which is already filing, you know, a First Amendment challenge, of course. It's probably going to go all the way to the Supreme Court when it's all said and done, like it always does. But, you know, to me, it's a tad bit draconian, just because, again, you know, the 14-year-old age, people don't realize what social media is. So, you know, we developed a TikTok alternative called Reelster, and we built in parental controls as well as age groups for content. So we had, you know, algorithms for 3 to 8 year olds, 9 to 12 year olds, 13 to 17, and 18 plus. And we have to rewrite that entire app now, because if this passes, which it already did pass, but if it actually stands in Florida, I would imagine almost every single state is going to do this. There is a ton good about this bill. I mean, 100% the reason why we started Wimkin was because Facebook shut down Save the Children hashtag and called it domestic terrorism. So, you know, we started these things to actually protect children. And so I agree with him 100% on every reason why he's doing this. I also agree that there is addictive factors to social media that children aren't going to pick up. But, you know, even though probably most 13-year-olds and under don't understand what the First Amendment is, it doesn't mean they don't have those rights. So it's a very, very hard line to, you know, either cross on either side. Now, if we could write something to where you made this specific to certain platforms like Snapchat, my goodness, please ban that for kids, because that is one where the predators lurk. That's where you can pretty much do anything you want, because those, you know, those chats disappear. So, and he's right too, because on Hannity, and he said it perfectly, you know, you're at home with your kids. And you think your kids are upstairs watching TV or just playing on social media, and they're safe in your home. But there are predators lurking at all the time. There are. They're trying to get at them. And I just think there's a better way, Bob. I think that if you could teach these things, take out the drag queen book hours and things of that nature in these schools, of course. But, you know, if you were to teach social media, you know, certainly etiquette, safety in schools, start, you know, at a younger age, and also get the parents involved in this aspect, I think it's a better way of stating the government doesn't have to ban, you know, this for certain age groups. Because YouTube Kids, that's a whole entire social media platform. And, you know, it's Google. So that's categorized as social media. Are they going to ban that? And when it comes down to it too, Bob, this is what I think a lot of people didn't realize. You know, when we were all forced back into our homes to work because of COVID restrictions, not so much in Florida, obviously, they were probably the most open state when it comes to it. But, you know, these individuals that have jobs and they were forced back in their home, that, you know, this summer's coming up. If they're working from home and their child is 13 years old and wants to watch videos, they can't do that anymore. They literally can't. So sort of that babysitter aspect, which might not be the right term, but, you know, that aspect that helps these parents get through their day, that's gone. It's 100% gone. And then even further, how do you enforce it? You know, if a parent says, oh, I'm letting my child watch social media, then are you going to arrest them? Because when it comes down to it, if me as a platform owner, if all of us as platform owners, if we somehow do not verify that a person is, you know, 15 actually, in Florida, obviously, but if we don't verify this, all we really see is an IP address. These things are beatable at all times. We have to pay that child up to $10,000 per instance of when they are able to create an account and get on your platform, and also $50,000 fine. So, I mean, it's outrageous to me that, and there's going to be kids out there that are trying to create accounts just to make money. I mean, this is something that really has to really be chopped apart, I think, to do it right. But I, fundamentally, it's impossible not to agree with DeSantis because you want your kids to be safe.
Sure. Yeah, no, there's no question about that. We're talking to Jason Shepherd. He is an entrepreneur. He has founded Wimkin Social Media, which I'll ask you about in a moment. You also said you have something called Reelster, which is an alternative to TikTok, and I want to get some information on that, too. I would love to have an alternative to TikTok available to kids. To the point, though, you said that your particular app, you have algorithms written four different age groups. I think you said 3 to 9 and 13 to 17, or I don't remember what they all were. But you said because of this bill in Florida, you will have to rewrite that entire app. And I want to know, I want to know why. What is, or how are the algorithms written for, say, the 13 to 17 age range that you described? What is allowable on those that would be, would go against what Florida is trying to stop in their 14, 15, and 16-year-old range? And again, for those who did not hear this part of it, Florida's new bill would ban social media for 14-year-olds. Under 14-year-olds cannot have these accounts at all, and if they're 14 or 15, they have to get parental permission to sign off on this. So since that's the range you just said of 13 to 17, you're going to have to rewrite it. What is available on your app for 13 to 17-year-olds that would be inappropriate, so much so that you would have to rewrite it so that it would meet these standards?
Well, nothing would actually be inappropriate. I mean, we don't allow any content. Wimkin also, it's more of an adult platform in terms of its political in nature. But with Reelster, again, you know, we saw the Restrict Act coming down the line, of course, and we wrote these algorithms. So really, we have to rewrite it based on the fact that anybody under 14 can't get on it. So, you know, the 3 to 8, we have to take that off. And we have to rewrite everything from just the age groups and the parental control aspects. Now, what I would like him to do, which it really doesn't help, though, because it can be faked. And, you know, I think maybe I'm speaking for myself here. I'm not speaking for you, Bob. But, you know, I remember when I was about a 13 or 14-year-old kid, I went in my mom's purse and took $10 to go get some food or something. So, you know, if these individuals had us write into the apps, you know, a waiver for their parents to sign off on, I think that's a great alternative to what is going on right now with an outright ban. But it can also be fake. You know, and then it, you know, somebody, if you want your ID, you know, it's never going to be perfect. There's really no way.
Nothing ever is. Nothing ever. People get fake IDs too and go buy beer when they're only 17. Nothing is going to withstand every attempt to try to circumvent a new law or a new rule or a new restriction, obviously. But to the extent that it does impact those who don't find their way to get fake things, or parents who won't allow them, you know, who are going to monitor and to make sure that their kids aren't faking, you know, parental permission and whatever different ways that they're going to enforce those things. If it impacts thousands, tens or hundreds of thousands, or Lord only knows, I don't even know how many million children there are in Florida, but if it impacts a significant number of them, isn't it worth their protection? Because some who are going to be the lawbreakers are always going to be the lawbreakers, the rule breakers.
Right.
And maybe parents are going to support that rule breaking. Hell, there's parents who throw, you know, drinking parties for their high school age kids. And, you know, they're not always going to follow it. But the parents who are afraid that if they do so, they're going to get arrested, that's a pretty good deterrent. And they don't throw those parties. So isn't that worth it?
You know, fundamentally, I do believe so. I just don't believe it's going to be able to be passed. I mean, well, again, it's written into law, but I don't believe that it's going to withstand the Supreme Court challenges it's about to have. And I fundamentally have to agree with the, you know, Net Choice coming in and stating that, hey, they're going to say outright this is just wrong. I think we can just change this a little bit to where we have more, education, again, in terms of what you should and should not do on social media, keep people safe from social media predators, and also not wrecking their life at 14 years old because they posted a picture of themselves or sent a picture of themselves to the wrong hand. You know, all those things I think can be mitigated through real education. And I think that's something with the bullying and all these things, and, you know, the psychological aspects of social media for children, that's 100% I fundamentally agree with this bill, that it is addictive, and we've seen kids take their lives over bullying. And, you know, the fact that they don't understand, you know, what they have done to themselves at the age of, you know, 13, 14, 15 years old. So, yeah, I think it's a great aspect. I just don't think it's going to survive. So I think they should start looking right now at how they could, you know, change this to where it would survive a Supreme Court challenge. And, again, the only way I can see that is, you know, the education factor, and also having parents somehow sign off on a – there's nothing, again, that's going to be ironclad, yeah, but something in that app where they could actually submit something, or, you know, a digital signature stating that I verify that I'm, you know, allowing my child to do this and I will monitor it.
Right, right. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, peep shows or burlesque shows or something like that. It's 18 and over. But that doesn't mean 16-year-olds don't sneak in. But you, sure, you still want to have the rule that says 18 and over. You don't want kids going into drag shows or peep shows or anything like that that just may not be necessarily healthful or right for them. And so we have those laws, even though we know some are going to cheat. This is kind of the same thing. I don't want my kids to have access to things that are harmful, that they shouldn't be seeing, that they shouldn't be getting addicted to, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we want to pass something that will deter as many of them as possible from doing so. So I'm with you from a standpoint of, you know, ideology and you know, of ideas, but in practicality it might be a little bit tougher, as you say, because there are going to be challenges to this. Let me pivot, Jason Shepherd, to Wimkin. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at your site now, and Lord help me, I don't need another media. I've scaled down. I can't handle all these social. I mean, I used to have for goodness sakes, what are they all? I deleted them off my phone, so I can't even remember them now, all of the different apps there were. But I mean, especially when Twitter was being completely run by the you know, the radical leftists with the full-on suppression and censorship and so forth. I started to go into some of the others, you know, that popped up that are a little bit, you know, Telegram is one of them, and I can't remember all of it. But I can't manage that many social media accounts, so I just scaled it down to Twitter now that it's under Elon, and Facebook, which is, sadly, it's still under Zuckerberg, but it is easily the most far-reaching platform that there is.
Sure.
And then Trump's Truth Social, so that I can kind of keep tabs on what's going on there. Tell me why I should download Wimkin. I don't need another one. It's killing me. I've got too many as it is. I've already scaled it down, but I'm looking at yours, and it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Tell me why I should download Wimkin, and tell me what 100% uncensored social media means. Because that's what your brand is here on the homepage. And Elon is getting dragged for, you know, even coming close to uncensored social media, because the radicals say, well, that means you're going to allow the N-word, and you're going to allow, you know, pro-Nazi propaganda, et cetera, et cetera. So give me the Wimkin layout here.
Yeah, and that's a very fine line. First and foremost, I would say we've already been through that. We were banned by the app stores for eight months. We were number one in the app stores. Basically, we were in the top 10 from when we launched in September of 2020, and by mid-January, we were banned because we were blamed for the alleged insurrection. So we were banned 3 days after Parler, which is one you probably had. But
Parler,
you forgot
about. I did. Yep, thank you.
Yep. Sure thing. So, but here's the reason why I think we were banned so quickly was because Wimkin is set up like a Facebook meets a Twitter, meets a YouTube, and also like an Instagram or a TikTok, because we have Reels. So we have almost every single feature that Facebook has. So when you have been on other free speech platforms, nobody compares to us. You know, we are legitimately an alternative to Facebook. And I think they saw, you know, what was happening and how we were getting so many downloads and being number one in the app stores almost every single day. Then they say, hey, this is free speech. They're allowing these people to talk freely, you know, against the narrative. That's one thing that I think really scared the heck out of the powers that be, so to speak. And so we fought them for 8 months, Bob. And then as soon as we actually won our case against them, 2 months later, the House Select Committee on J6 comes in and tries to shut us down as well. So one of the main reasons I would say definitely download us is because we stood up and we really protected every single one of our users' voices, and we will continue to do that. Secondarily is just the features we have. I mean, you could video chat anybody in the world for as long as you want for free. We don't charge money. If you wanted to live stream your entire show to us, you could. You know, there's, again, just think of a free speech version of every single feature of Facebook, plus you can upload 100 gigabyte videos. So if you want to upload your entire podcast, you can. And it's a real social setting. It's not, you know, like just a video sharing platform like a Rumble is. Not that I'm taking anything away from Rumble.
Sure.
But it's something that's, you know, we have a lot more to offer than those, you know, these platforms do.
So tell me about the, you know, you got banned for 9 months from the app stores. What did they charge you with? What was that all about?
Well, so actually it started on Twitter. We had individuals from many different organizations state that, hey, they're allowing organization against the government. There was one meme that was put up called Million Militia March. It wasn't organizing anything, and it wasn't certainly stating for anybody to do anything negative against the government. But, you know, they saw these things, and then they had a campaign against us on Twitter to where, you know, they had legitimate, not so much government attorneys, but watchdogs and things out there that were posting things and saying, go on Wimkin, create this type of terrible content, screenshot it, and send it to the app stores. So it was basically a setup against us. But we were banned for, on Google Play, 5 instances of posts that they did not care for, that they said were, you know, objectionable content. That's what they call it. And on Apple, 4. That's the only instances they could find after scouring our entire platform. And so essentially what we did is we said, well, we're not changing. If you remember Parler and Bongino being involved in that, he said, fight big tech tyranny by coming over to Parler. Well, when Parler's back in the App Store next week, that's not fighting big tech tyranny. That's bowing to it. So we went a different route and we fought. And we ended up winning based on the fact that all they asked us to do in the end was that 100% social media, I'm sorry, 100% uncensored social media. They wanted us to remove that from our basic tagline. And they're right, because it's not 100% uncensored. We don't allow pornography, we don't allow nudity, and we don't allow people to commit crimes on our platform. So I agreed to that concession, but that was it. So, you know, and then again, when the House Select Committee came in, my goodness, it was because of all the press we had. I think we had over 211 articles about us, and then TV shows, you know, dedicated to Wimkin being basically, I can't even tell you what I was called. I remember domestic terrorist, which was fun, racist, which makes absolutely no sense, and everything else under the sun you can think a leftist would call you just for offering free speech. But so, yeah, we had a lot of attention from that, and it took us a major uphill battle to fight. And it's every day still a fight. You know, we get a lot of individuals who don't like us. They want to attack the platform. We have many, many cyber attacks per day that we have to ward off. And it's been nothing but cancel culture since then. I mean, truthfully, and all we wanted to do is just protect people's First Amendment rights. And what they don't understand on this is coming from the left and mainstream media and big tech, which I certainly think.
Hey Jason, we're gonna probably have to pick this up next time we chat, because I'm out of time here. I'm up against the bottom of the hour. I'm gonna give it a shot. I'm gonna go ahead and sign up and have a look at it. I really am, because I mean, I'm interested. I do like free speech. I actually serve with an organization called Citizens for Free Speech as their national communications director. I'm all about it, and I do like uncensored platforms. So I want to see what this is all about, and maybe we can talk again another time, not just about the law in Florida, but just about the advent of social media and where it goes from here. Okay.
Absolutely, Bob. Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it, and we'll get you approved on there.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Jason Shepard, founder of Wimkin Social Media and Reelster, an alternative to TikTok. I got to check that one out, too.
The answer.
All right, 11:37, and we wind it down. Final segment on AM 1420, The Answer. We have not had a chance to take calls today because we did a lot of monologuing in hour number one and then a lot of guesting in hours number two and a half. So for the final segment, if you do want to get in now, 216-901-0945. And 888-281-1110. I'm trying to get posted the monologue that I did after the top 9 at 9 this morning. This was in the 9:30 portion of the show, in which we discussed the Chris Quinn editorial in The Plain Dealer and on Cleveland.com. It was, look, if I start talking about it now, I'm going to do it again. I regret nothing that I said. It is just simply, well, as Peter and I discussed about it as well, Kersenow and I discussed about it as well, it is a positive thing that they went ahead and lifted the veil of journalism that they may have been, the thin one that they may have been hiding under, we're really honest journalists. You could see right through that thing, and now they've lifted it out of the way, and we see the reality, or what's behind the curtain. We can mix up our metaphors here all we want. But they have admitted now, essentially, that they are not a news organization that has any interest whatsoever in providing unbiased information for the readers to absorb and to, you know, interpret and decide for themselves what they think. They are a blind partisan tabloid newspaper that is interested in advancing a political and ideological agenda, not one that is interested in providing facts and information for the improvement of the understanding of the population that reads their stuff. So it's positive in that way that they have essentially come clean now about who they are and what they are, but it's negative in just that if people don't take the time to listen to analyses or read a companion piece analyzing this nonsense from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, they're going to read this article, this editorial, and think that it must be true. It must be right. And that's troubling, considering we are in an election year. And they're plain, biased, blindly partisan reporting and journalism is going to be believed. They're comparing 2024 to the 1930s. They're literally saying that if we, because they're looking at the numbers and they have to be terrified by the fact that Americans' lives have been so wrecked by Biden policies and left-wing policies that they are flocking back to Donald Trump because our lives were better when Trump was in office because we had more money. Costs were down. Wages were up. We had a controlled border. I mean, inflation was low. I mean, just up and down the line, everything was better. Mortgage rates were bottomed out. People were buying houses, getting the home of their dreams for 2.5% now instead of 7.9% today. I mean, all of it was so much better, and people are crime was under control. People were flocking to our, according to the polls or the polling services, they're flocking back to Trump. And the left-wing ideologues, like these people in the Plain Dealer, are terrified of that fact. They're terrified that Trump is winning in every battleground state head-to-head against Biden. They can't understand it. They're terrified that in national polling, even those run by the New York Times, Trump is beating Biden. They're like, what? How can this be? We have to do something. And so they went ahead and wrote, or they're writing articles and editorials saying that Trump is Hitler. Trump is Hitler. And if you support him, you supported Hitler. And you support the gassing of millions of Jews. And you are enabling the glorious democracy that they think the United States is to be destroyed by this orange man. This is, they literally are so far out there. I am equal parts glad that they admitted what their bias is, but terrified that most or many of their readers won't see it as bias. They'll see it as fact. So anyway, that's a long way of saying I did a monologue exposing this line by line for every bit of nonsense that it is. And we've uploaded it to our webpage, to whkradio.com. If you want to look for it, you can find it. Its headline is going to be Always Right Radio with Bob France and Epic Rant. But we're going to have to fix that. I want people to know what it is. We're going to fix that, too. Seth, that's another butchery by you. I got to fix that, too. We got to tell people what it's about. So I had to fix like six typos that Seth made in two sentences. Seth, where'd you go to high school again?
That is inaccurate. I went to Elyria Catholic.
No, I don't think you did. I would have seen you there. I think I would have seen you there. And I also would have. I would also be able to tell by the quality of your writing whether or not you went to Elyria Catholic. Because had you gone to Elyria Catholic, I wouldn't have had to correct six typos in two sentences.
I don't think that's accurate.
It is 100% accurate. I'm sitting here going, okay, oh, quick typo, got to fix that. Reading along. Oh, look, another one there. And then I thought, maybe you didn't mean for this to be published yet. This was a work in progress. You were going to go back and you were just typing super fast during one of the commercial breaks or something, and that maybe you just kind of like tripped over the keyboard a couple of times.
So
maybe
I take away your power. It is my month, and I take away your power of making fun of me.
Oh, so maybe your leg fell off and it hit the keyboard and mashed up a few keys. And,
quite possible.
That could be it as well,
quite
I suppose.
Possible.
So we'll have to fix
forgiven,
this.
Though, so.
You are forgiven because it's your month.
Yes.
It's Seth Williams' month. The month of, what is it again? Limb difference.
Limb loss and discovery. Limb difference.
Limb loss and limb difference awareness.
Yes.
It's an actual thing, which blows me away. But it is. Anyway, so it's Seth's month, so he can't take this this type of criticism. It's not fair. He shouldn't have to. Okay.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.